is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
Hour, which means here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK The Ticket, it's time for the MGO Blog Roundtable brought to you by Homeshore Lending. Homeshore Lending is a local company, and you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest.
We have in studio the MGO Blog Roundtable crew. We have Craig Ross.
Howdy, guys.
I do not have a Mercedes.
He rode up in a Maybach, folks. He rode up in a Maybach.
He's not even a comrade anymore.
We introduce Brian Cook from
that
now
I
on
from my
play
grandma.
Maybach music. Play Maybach music every time Brian Cook comes on because he drives a black Maybach.
I am purchasing a car, but it is not going to be a Mercedes because they advertise on college football games. And I can't have
but
that.
Craig Ross
not
said
a comrade.
It. But Craig Ross said you have a Mercedes.
Yes, because Craig Ross is a liar.
How have we gotten this far into this show and not confirmed the fact that Craig Ross is a liar?
But wait, Craig you mean has, not just on his predictions?
Craig has fans that live on his every word.
A lot of people have fans. Bad people have fans.
Bad people. And all of them are bad people. Who are my
well, fans. Unless they're mutual fans.
Unless they're mutual fans.
Yeah, then they're good people.
Right. And Fang, how you doing this morning from Power Rank?
I'm good. I'd like to be known as Comrade Fang in the Ford Focus from now on the show.
Yeah, there's only one Mercedes driver among us.
That's right.
Are you serious?
Well, I'm just taking Craig's word for it.
Like, yeah. It's just, why... I don't even want to get into it.
I got to give you credit because, you know, I try to, you know, there's a certain level of etiquette and decorum I try to maintain on Twitter. And every now and then I just shed it all together. And Brian Cook made me shed it yesterday because I don't know if you saw the story about the kid at Georgia who was kicked off the baseball team for a racial slur against Justin Fields, the superstar wonder kid, future quarterback at Georgia, and Brian said, "Oh, well, he could just go play for D'Antonio." I was like, "Hey, you know what? I should laugh at this, but it's pretty on point. It's kind of accurate, right?"
I mean, somebody got mad at me, but I blocked a lot of Michigan State fans because only one Michigan State fan was like, "Ah." Man, I must have blocked everybody else.
No, it was pretty. It was well played. Well played for sure. Michigan, to start the game last week against Northwestern, you would not say well played to start. But
no.
But being down 17-0 on the road against the team, coming off a bye week that's well coached in desperation mode, for you to do that, I think is a sign of you cannot play your best and dig yourself out of that kind of hole. I think that's progress.
And my theme on the game sort of is erratic play by our skill positions. I mean, the first series, we throw on first down, we throw out to number 9. He's got at least 8 or 9 yards. Yeah. And for some reason, he cuts backwards, mm-hmm. and we end up with 5 yards on it. Well, what's going on there? And then on second down, we run sort of a jet sweep with a dual action by number 8. And Gentry kills it. He's got the guy. He's got the seal. It's sealed. Well, I mean, there's 10 to 50 yards on that play. He's got a kick out, right. And it's sealed on the inside well enough so that kid's going to be.
Yeah, I was watching that. And we were watching the game with Jamie Morris. And, you know, you could, as the play, right as it was happening, he was saying, cut inside. Yeah. You know, those running back eyes kind of took over. And to your point, he went outside, got hit for a 2-yard loss. Where if he cuts inside, he at least gets.
Yeah, so now it's like third and 6. We throw it on third down. I think Patterson, who I think had a very good game and really sort of won the game at the end. You may disagree with me.
I actually do.
I think he had a good game running the football. But it wasn't his best game throwing.
Yeah, he missed Gentry for a first down, who was open, I felt, on the third down play. So it was like that a lot of the game. There was a lot of unevenness in the offense that
we're seeing, and this is why I love this segment. You guys spend a lot of time going back over the tape. I even use you guys as a cheat sheet on the weeks where I don't go back over the tape. But this week I did because I wanted to reconcile, my initial impressions with what actually happened in the game, especially in light of all the criticism of play calling as the anchor for the offense in that game. And watching it back, just like, man, there were plays on the field to be had that they just left out there.
Yeah, even the thing that I was probably the crankiest about after the game was the third and short wide receiver screen to Nico Collins.
Mm-hmm.
Collins has a first down on that if he just goes straight.
And he makes a poor cut.
There was another play where he's got a possible first down or a fourth and short where he tries to bounce outside a guy and gives up that yardage that he can get if he just goes straight north and south.
Yeah.
And he's actually really good at getting extra yardage, at getting yards after the catch on those flash screens they run, but only if he just goes north and south and tries to run some people over. He's got to, like, internalize the fact that this is no longer
I'm a big
school.
Guy.
Yeah, and I'm not Steve Breston. Mm-hmm. He's an effective player. That's the reason that they're using him on those screens. But he and DPJ kind of left some yards after the catch on the field that were really important.
Yeah, there were so many instances. There was a time where Nico was open across the middle. I believe it was a third down play where Shea kind of went high
Shea had a game that I thought was probably his worst by some margin at Michigan. So he was uncomfortable looking at what Northwestern was showing him. Northwestern was often dropping eight guys, and they were able to cover a lot of people, but also it just kind of felt like he didn't want to throw the ball in certain situations. So, late Northwestern was kind of alternating between extremely aggressive defenses and then very passive ones. And Michigan caught one of the extremely aggressive defenses, and they had two-on-two deep, and I don't really care, what the coverage looks like. If you have Nico Collins and Donovan Peoples-Jones two-on-two downfield, that ball's got to go. And he scrambled around and he got 0 yards, and I was just like, you gotta put that up.
Yeah, my takeaway was, like you, I didn't think he had anywhere close to his best day throwing the football. No. I was heartened by his ability, because, you're going to have off days, but his ability to still find a way to help his team win that game. I thought he put him on his back.
Absolutely.
Running the football.
Well, and especially that throw on the drive where they took the lead was pretty key.
Are you talking about the one to Gentry?
Yeah, I think so. And then obviously getting that first down to kill the clock. I agree with Brian. He did not have his best game, and it probably hasn't looked as good the last couple of games. But I mean, it's a 180 from where we were 11 months ago at the quarterback position. So I think we need to appreciate that.
I mean, there's a couple things. I mean, one, Brian is just cranky because the because the cigar lighter on your Mercedes doesn't work. He can't smoke his stogies while he's. Oh, that's a real reason. But first of all, if 84 catches the ball in the second series, he looks a lot better.
There's a slant play,
I think, in the
third. Are we just not saying names of receivers? Are you that mad at him?
No, I forget. Kind of, I remember the numbers better than
that. The guy's a little bit
Craig's getting older. So he goes to numbers instead of names.
Yeah, and then
these guys drive around in Mercedes on campus this week.
No. And then there's a slant pattern. I don't know if that's to Collins, and where it looks like he doesn't ever see the ball, and I'm not sure that's not a catchable ball. Yeah, he raises his hand.
We never got a good replay on that.
And I thought the same thing.
Yeah, and so take those two, and it looked like a good pass. So I mean, there was some stuff where he could have been helped on. I felt like you, Sam, that when the game was in. really in doubt, he did put the team on his back and win the game. And Brian doesn't agree. Pro Football Focus graded him out as our best offensive player in 82. They maybe they're wrong.
I have no idea what they were seeing, honestly. Yeah. So one of the first down scrambles he had, I thought he had Peoples Jones over the middle. And it was a pretty clever route where they're just kind of dropping Perry, mm-hmm. and he's drawing up a defender, and then Peoples Jones seems wide open behind that, and he just doesn't want to like pull the trigger on that. And, I mean, we'll see. I mean, Northwestern did a really good job of anticipating what Michigan was going to run. So I got pretty frustrated on the game-winning drive because every time Michigan's running the ball, they have 35 linebackers crossing the line of scrimmage 2 seconds after the play. Sorry, a half second after the play starts. And then when Michigan throws the ball, everybody's dropping, and they get huge depth in 10 yards. And I did have a problem with that. I had a problem with the play calling in that respect because it really seemed like Northwestern was able to anticipate what Michigan was going to do, run or pass, and Michigan didn't really get those linebackers sucked up in any way whatsoever, despite their extreme aggression against the run.
I mean, the guy who's the defensive coordinator there is played at Michigan. Mike Hankwitz, is that his name? Mm-hmm. And yeah. he's always given Michigan trouble almost every year.
You know, I keep coming back to, I agree. I think there are instances in this game where you could certainly point to play calling, which I mentioned earlier this week. But this drive sequence you're talking about where you had the big drop, then you had the Nico Collins play, then on fourth down,
they had some issues, but I do have a problem when you're running the ball and there's two safeties 6 and 8 yards off the line of scrimmage. Like, you gotta throw that. And even if you're not throwing it downfield, you got Ronnie Bell out there with a very, very soft corner with no safety help. You can just throw him a little smoke screen. He's gonna get 6 yards.
Now that may be on Patterson too, because I assume he's got the discretion to call.
You know, when that happens smoke. 3 times in a row on first down, I'm just like,
oh, see, but
come
I, you
on,
know,
we
I went
we
back,
gotta have something else.
I went back and looked at it. They were pretty good on first down.
I'm just talking about like the drive at the end of the game.
I got you.
Just setting downs on fire by running into 9-man.
Oh yeah, well okay, yeah. Look, I mentioned that they did fall into a very predictable rut.
Right.
In the last couple of now it was inconsequential in the second to last drive because they scored.
You're still putting yourself in
the
situation.
I hear you. And then the last drive, I mean, their objective is they're trying to eat the timeouts.
Yeah, no, I didn't have a problem with the last drive except that Patterson probably should have pulled it on second down.
I hear you. No, they did. They absolutely on those drives it was very predictable. But before that, man, here's where I am. I watched that game. I see everything they left on the field. I was like, man, they're close. But at the same time, we've been saying they're close. We've been saying they're close for a little while now. I mean, 5 games into the season is not obviously the midway point. We saw them. There were plays on that field that they made versus Nebraska. I'm talking about it's opponent. It's not opponent specific. It's not like. It mattered that it was Northwestern on the other side. There were balls in the breadbasket that were dropped. You had the play. You had I think it was the miscommunication with Eubanks. He wants Eubanks to sit, wants him to sit down in the zone. Yep. But Eubanks keeps running. He had on what should have been a touchdown. He had Grant Perry open on a fade in the end zone, and you could see he was like, "Damn, I had him."
Well, and
he missed him.
He had Collins, and he held Collins up, and that's probably a touchdown if he leads into the corner.
Right.
Like, it's just stuff that's a little off.
You had a scramble, first down scramble that was taken off the board by a legitimate holding call.
I don't know.
I think that was legit.
That was borderline. I mean, it was.
What's a holding call?
Yeah, you could call that in every single play of the game, and yet they just called it on that one. That was called by the same side judge, I think, incidentally. So I don't want to go there. All right.
But I mean,
I'll say this for the refs. About half of their calls were right.
That's not bad.
About half.
Yeah, I mean, that holding call I felt was – it's frustrating to get that holding call on Michigan when you see
Rashawn Gary get
yanked back twice on the same play, and it's like you're calling that and you're not calling the other one.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, look. If I'm not talking about the calls against Michigan relative to those against, if I'm just looking at the call in a vacuum and saying, was it legit? I think that was, I could see holding there.
I could see holding there if they were calling other similar mm-hmm. sort of things, which you. They were not.
I hear you.
You know.
So back to my point, I see those plays that were left out just like, man, you know, we've seen them execute at a level that could be pretty good. They just haven't been able to do it in back-to-back games. So while I say they're close, I feel like they're close because we've seen them do it. But at the same time, I can't predict it's going to come because we haven't seen them string those kinds of efforts together.
I mean, I thought that the run blocking in general was good. It was just overwhelmed by the fact that they were pretty predictable in what they were going to do most of the time. They got a couple of these like A-gap ISOs.
ISOs, yeah.
Where they were just able to like have Mason hammer on Patty Fisher, which was really impressive. And that was something that played off something they did last week. So they sent Mason to the backside line where they were running that down G stuff that worked really well against Nebraska. And that A-gap power looks like that superficially, but then the play is different. So Michigan got the other linebackers to bury themselves elsewhere in the line. That's why they got chunk runs on those plays. And I didn't really feel that was happening except on like those three or four instances. And the rest of the game, like I felt like Northwestern knew it was coming and was able to overwhelm it.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't run. I only counted four down G's this week.
Well,
I
told you it's
yeah,
not
and
a,
that, I'm giving credit here.
Okay,
I'm saying that
fired up over here.
Yeah, I'm saying that you had predicted that down G wasn't really sustainable, and I think Seth and Brian wrote a great article this week on their blog.
It was probably just Seth.
Okay, and I think you said or he said that Northwestern plays a little more evenish, where they spread their defensive tackles a little wider, and that made it harder to run down. Gee, I think they ran it four times, twice in each half. In the first half, it went okay twice. The second half, it got blown up twice. So
I mean, they got the chunk run from Higdon on that. So, yeah. I mean, so you get down to the end of the game, and basically on three or four different plays, Patterson has the opportunity to keep, and it's wide, wide open. And they get a first down, and they move the chains, and they basically kill the game. I'd rather have the kind of offense where Patterson has to be accounted for on a regular basis so that would not happen. But it just kind of feels like he doesn't really want to run the ball. Like,
yeah, you know, I guess the first few games I felt like that was by design. They were just telling him to give it every time because he clearly wasn't reading it.
Right.
I mean, he was just giving the football. So I thought that was – hey, we're preserving our quarterback. We're also holding back a card. And they, on the big play that should have been that wasn't, they totally ignored him.
Yeah, I mean, Northwestern went into this game being like, there's no such thing as a Michigan zone read. And, you know, Michigan got him for a couple of chunks. Mm-hmm. But I just prefer the kind of offense where you're absorbing that guy because he's a real threat instead of like a, we're going to pull this out.
And you know, we saw him run more in this game than we have in any game up to this point, but there could still be another level, right? He could be a against Wisconsin or Michigan State kind of holding back. Yeah, we are really gonna get all Trace McSorley on him against those teams, you know. So we'll see.
I would suggest running him against Ohio State given what we saw in that game. But
right.
Yeah. One more thing: if it's second goal from the three, the answer is Ben Mason. There's no reason to do anything other than give it to Ben Mason. Give it to Ben Mason three times, you get a touchdown. Like, that's...
Did you give it to Ben Mason on any fourth and short?
Any fourth and short. Like, that's why you recruited Cesar Ruiz. That's why you recruited Mike Onwenu. That's why you recruited Juwan Bushel-Beatty. Well, you didn't recruit him, but that's why you're playing him. Those guys all go 330 plus. Mike Onwenu is listed at 350, but nobody knows how much he actually weighs. You have the big, big boys. There's no reason not to send the man they nicknamed Bench right behind them for a yard whenever that's an option.
Yeah. I think after they lost the first one, wasn't the next short yardage situation Ben Mason?
I mean, he had two short yardage situations in this one. He gained 2 yards on third and one. He gained 3 yards on third and one. Just give it to him.
I think they're. I think they agree with you. We got to get to a break. Be back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, The Ticket.
It's time for more of the MGO Blog Roundtable here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, The Ticket. The MGO Blog Roundtable is brought to you by Homeshore Lending, a local company, and you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest.
We are back, folks, here on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, The Ticket. We have Brian Cook, the Maybach driver, Ed Fang, and Craig Ross.
I don't even know what a Maybach is.
I don't either. I have no idea.
Is it a Maybach?
Maybach, however you want to say it. It's what Brian Cook drives.
And as a part of his contract negotiations here, he's insisting upon lighting up his big cigar while we're doing this. It's just not right.
He has not read our back, so he will not get that privilege.
Just not right about that.
Why have you done this to me?
Your readers didn't know?
Well, I guess.
I didn't know either.
I run a sports blog. No one's buying this stuff.
So, look, Michigan's defense again, guys, number one in the country in total defense. So you start any sort of critique of the defense with that, you know, with that perspective, saying, you know, this defense ain't gotten to a 17-0 hole, and then they stoned them the rest of the way. So, you know, are there vulnerabilities? Sure, but it didn't kill them in this game. They were really able to lock in after Northwestern came out guns a-blazing.
Yeah, and I thought they were a little bit unfortunate to give up 17 points on 200 yards. Like, it's kind of like a pitcher giving up all his hits in one inning.
Yep.
So instead of scattering them across, you know, six innings and not giving up any runs.
Right. And they were obviously put in a difficult position with the Michigan not getting 4th-and-1. And that's a touchdown. That turns into a touchdown right. The other way.
Well, and their first few drives were the 44, the 36, and the 48. So they're operating some short fields, had a couple errors, and things kind of went from there. I didn't think that Michigan, like, there are so many stories in the media this week about, like, how they're, like, not listening to the haters. Like, who's hating on Don Brown? Like, what is going on? That people are writing all these stories about.
Well, Don Brown is an icon.
It's locally. Like I said, I don't think there's ever a case where criticism from the outside is like, hey, you know what? That's a good point. I think all criticism is taken personally. I think it's a matter of from our perspective, is the criticism constructive? It's what we try to do. So in talking about the defense, yeah, I don't know what it was about, you know, the start against Northwestern, the start against Notre Dame. I don't know if I haven't been able to pinpoint a reason for why they were slow. But the point that I seized upon here is that, man, when it came time to make some adjustments, they really made them. And starting up front, starting with that front seven, I really felt like after Northwestern went on their little run, we really saw the guys first up front start to get home. Dwumfer, pressured the court. He got a sack. He forced, I think, also Quiddy Pay's second sack. Lawrence Marshall got pressure on the quarterback. We saw Brian Monet make a couple of plays in the run game. I think he stopped one for no gain and stopped another one for a 3-yard gain. I really like what we saw from Carlo Kemp. You know, there was one play, I can't remember what drive it was, but it was an RPO, and Michigan ran a game up front where Carlo Kemp chases the tight end to the flat.
Yeah.
And Thorson wanted, he was going to throw there, and Carlo Kemp was covering the tight end.
Yeah, and I thought, like, he should probably still throw that.
maybe so, but I'm like, man, look at this. You know, that's a play that kid is making. Thorson tries to turn it up, and of course Rashawn Gary is there, is waiting for him. And speaking of Rashawn Gary, he goes down, and they don't miss a beat pressure wise.
No, and they had Uche chip in a couple of rushes, and he only had a dozen snaps, but it kind of felt a little bit like last early Chase Winovich, where he gets like 10 snaps, and three of them are pretty impressive.
So. How about Josh Ross in coverage on a tight end, dislodging guy from the ball, and then Jordan Glasgow, I thought, made a few plays.
Yeah, Glasgow, I thought, you don't really feel like there's a huge drop-off on the defense when he's in instead of Hudson. He knows where he's at. He's athletic enough to get tight ends. He should have been beaten on one angle route that the tight end ran, and he turned Glasgow all the way around and probably should have gotten a first down. And by the time the throw comes, the window is just not there anymore. So he's slotted in, and there hasn't really been a huge drop-off. Now, I think Hudson has more upside, and I'm glad to see him return to the lineup, but it's nice that at the very worst, he's a really good backup.
Right.
So, you know, what was impressive to me about the defense most is you're down 17-0. The offense hasn't really done a whole lot, and it would be easy, it seems to me, to go crazy and try and overextend and gamble, but they didn't. They sort of stayed with their stuff, and the game stabilized, and they never panicked. They never, you know, they just kept playing good defense, right.
And the spark has been the best player on the team thus far this year, Chase Winovich. He was an animal.
He was everywhere. He was like, I think,
is that the 20. Highest grade you've ever had?
No. Mo Hurst was on this team for 3 years, sir.
But it was an incredible.
Mo Hurst had like a plus 30 last year.
Oh, is that right?
It was an incredible
right?
grade, and he will probably never be topped. Yeah. But he had an elite game, and he was every single play he was a factor. And the most impressive thing he was doing is, remember when Ryan Glasgow would just rip a guy by him, the old grip and rip, and he pulled that off like three times. And he's a much smaller player and playing against left tackle, and so many times that guy just ended up on his knees because Chase Winovich used him as a slingshot to go get the running back.
So. And speaking of Mo Hurst, he had an elite game this weekend. Yeah, I think Pro Football Focus graded him at a 91 this week. And he's
good.
Despite his health conditions. Yeah,
and despite the fact that, of course, the Lions passed on him for I don't know how many years.
Everyone passed on him.
You're about to make Brian's brain explode.
I mean,
the Lions.
Oh.
Yeah, he's so upset that they didn't draft him because he's really concerned about how they're doing.
You can talk trash about the Lions in brief Michigan-related ways. That's fine.
So we highlighted all of the positives. Yeah. You know, the things that jump out to you that Michigan has got to clean up, the penalties, the legitimate ones. The PI in the end zone was legit.
Yep.
The holding,
yep.
The holding on another third down was legit. You know, those are not the kind of personal pass interference plays that I think that you just discount. Personally, I think with as much man-to-man as Michigan plays, you're going to get some PI, some of the 50-50s. Right. But the obvious ones like those are the ones that they gotta clean up.
Yeah, that's exactly what I felt too. Like the stuff that happened against SMU. You can live with, like, because I feel like Michigan won most of those routes and got kind of crappy flags. The ones against Northwestern, you're beat and you're kind of in a panic mode. The Hill one didn't make sense to me because that's a guy named Flynn Nagel. You can run with Flynn Nagel. Like, maybe he got a step on you, but you're going to get that step back. Just calm down and be LeVert Hill. So I think they need to be a little bit less grabby. Like, I thought the long PBU on the slant on 3rd and 10, where Klatt and Gus Johnson are saying, well, they're lucky to go with the hole. It's like, yeah. And the risk-reward there, it's a little bit off, right?
Because
if he catches it for seven yards and you tackle, they're still punting. So I'd just dial it back a little bit, maybe, and have faith in your ability to go make a play on the ball.
And I just feel like that, you know, I think they'll be fine. I think they're going to be fine there. If there's a vulnerability on this defense, and Don Brown kind of talked about it, you know, every defense you have, there are spots that teams are going to try to exploit.
Right.
You know, there's a weakness in every defense that teams try to take advantage of. For Michigan, the style of defense that they play, teams are, of course, they're going to try to get some man beaters on the outside, but where teams are experiencing the most success when we are talking about pass interference penalties is attacking the safeties and coverage. There was some success there, but not the kind of success that gets you beat in this game. Now, what needs to improve the most moving forward to me after penalties, though, it would be that, because they're going to face some teams that are more formidable in those spots than what they saw from Northwest.
Well, I think it did improve. So
It did in that game.
Don Brown had different stats than I did, but I had them 4-7 on slants for 5.8 yards an attempt, which is not good. And two of those incompletions were against the cornerback. So the safeties, I think they were 4 or 5. But on at least two of those plays, Thorson put it in a place where only his wide receiver could get it. And if he didn't throw the exact perfect ball, the safeties had a play on it. And that's all you can ask, because Michigan is setting up outside they're inviting these slants, mm-hmm. and in doing so, they've turned off slot fades. Has Michigan got hit by a slot fade yet this year? No. So they're making that trade-off. I think it's a good trade-off, and I think they've been able to improve on their slant coverage as the year's gone along.
Yeah, so. I mean, I tend to agree with that. I mean, I personally, it's preference. I think we can get pressure with four guys. I don't think we need to be, this team needs to be a crazy blitzing team. I'd rather see.
You ain't been hanging out with Joe Simon.
Yeah. I don't know. Did he say that? I have to agree with
that's
Joe.
Yeah, that's been Joe Simon's thing for weeks.
To me, they can get pressure with four, and
well, they are mixing stuff in. So yeah. The Cannell got hit on one where he's the safety, and he's like switching with Metellus, and mm-hmm. I thought he was late on that. So they're bringing him down from the free safety spot, and if he gets that right, he's stepping in front of that for either a PBU or an INT. And you know, they're running more zone. And they're running some zone from one high looks too, so they're giving it. Yeah.
Can you say that again?
They're running some zone from one high looks.
There are a lot of fans. They don't play any zone. Yes, they do.
So I chart two high versus one high, and that's a rough proxy for man versus zone because most of the zone looks are too high, and about a third of the snaps in this game were too high. So they run a fair amount.
See. Yeah. I mean, it's so just corroboration, folks.
What did you think, Brian? The very first. Play they hit the screen pass they broke early on the first drive.
Yeah,
do you remember that?
Yeah,
it looked to me like Metellus played it right, but then he got grabbed and held and thrown out of the play.
Nah.
That's what it looks
I
like to
he
me.
Missed the tackle.
I mean,
he missed the tackle because he didn't break down.
He reacted a step.
He reacted.
Slow,
I thought he reacted very well to it.
And he got blocked.
Blocked.
That got you a first down. And then I think most of the reason it actually broke bigger is that Devin Gill changed his mind halfway through the play. So he was trying to get over the top of the tackle. He changes his mind. He kind of stops, and then he tries to go back. And Tyree Cannell is reading what's happening in front of him. He sees what Gill's doing, and he expects that it's going to get funneled back to him. And then all of a sudden, he's in the same spot as mm-hmm. Devin Gill. And that's how you break big.
I mean, I know you thought this, but I think Ross at this point is sort of outpacing Gill in performance. Do you agree with that?
I do. I mean, I thought he had a number of good plays in this game. Gill had a couple of questionable ones. Like their first third down conversion was just hitting the running back in a mm-hmm. flat. And it's like,
you get over there.
Yeah, you really got to get over there because he didn't get a chip or anything or a rub. He just got beat. So he's getting more snaps. Ross is. I think he's getting two thirds mm-hmm. of the snaps where there's two inside linebackers on the field. And I'm kind of like, it feels like it's time just to be like, all right, he's the starter.
It's time for one more segment of the MGO Blog Roundtable here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050. WTK, the ticket. The MGO Blog Roundtable is brought to you by Homeshore Lending. Homeshore Lending is a local company, and you work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest.
We're back with the guys. We have Ed Feng in studio from the Power Rank. Ed, how you doing this morning?
I'm great, man.
I'm going to ask you a quick NFL question.
What's
up? Is Pat Mahomes your MVP?
Well, he struggled for quite a while in that Monday night game, but man... He still looked pretty good bringing him back.
He has 14 touchdowns and no interceptions.
Right.
16 touchdowns.
No, okay. But the interceptions is going to change, right? Because he's running around.
Still.
He's flinging it with that cannon. There are going to be some picks by the end of the year. But
sure.
They look excellent. Yes, but I'm sure.
I said yeah, sure, right. But it's pretty damn good.
Yes, he's looking.
14 to nothing ratio, and you're your first-year starter. He's fantastic. Brian Cook from MGO Blog.
Hello.
Is back.
Yes.
He, the driver of Mercedes.
Yeah.
According to Craig Ross.
Nobody
over
believes
here.
This stuff.
True. It's true, but believe what you want.
Hey, man, our guys.
This could be like this, Mercedes who, gifts
look,
on his
the
site.
The MGO Blog Roundtable is, I mean, we are dealing with the elites. I mean, elite. Craig has a place in Hawaii.
True.
Brian drives Mercedes.
Oh, my God.
That's how it works, right?
Nobody. He's a lawyer. Yeah, that's believable.
You're a media superstar, Brian Cook.
Media superstar.
So, guys, what do you think of Maryland?
I think sneaky good. Honestly, I mean, if they had not pooped their pants against Temple,
That's a big if. Though.
It's a big if. Granted, it is a big if. But if they had not, I mean, you'd be looking at the team. They've done what they should against good teams. They got a win over Texas.
Yeah,
the offense is,
I
think Texas is a solid team.
And I'm cutting them some slack for Temple, I think, two things. Mm-hmm. And talking to their guys a lot of complacency. They got full of themselves. And
Maryland getting complacency.
They did. Coming off of Texas, we're on a roll temple. I think they did some of that. Their offensive line was really battered. They were without their offensive tackles in that contest.
Well, they're about to be battered again.
Yeah, Terrence Davis is hurt, as he's been playing hurt. So you're down two starting tackles, and your best lineman is hurt as well. I think that was a factor in that game. But, you know, to see them win in different ways, you know, I thought this was a team that was going to be over-reliant on running the football. That Texas game, they won throwing the football, amazingly enough. And now you're starting to see them show the same rushing prowess that we've seen them have in past years. But the biggest difference, and there, you know, Steve Clark mentioned it, you know, the guy from Inside Maryland Sports mentioned it, they actually play some defense.
It's true, and I can't help but correlate the fact that they don't have the crazy person running their program right now. Did you see the Washington Post article where they're like putting up videos of animals killing each other during like training table?
That doesn't do anything.
Are
to
you
me.
Serious? Did you read that article?
I watch National Geographic. I watch animals killing other animals. I enjoy lions chasing gazelles.
Is that what you think the thrust of that was?
Look at the beauty of nature, Maryland.
That just doesn't, to me, you know, where the issue lies is not in the sort of culture of, you know, kill or be killed in a metaphoric sense.
Okay. You got to clarify that.
That doesn't get me. What is the issue is that you didn't have subordinates that understood the line between pushing a guy and harming a guy. That's a problem. And then when you harm the guy, you don't know how to treat him.
Yeah.
That I don't think you recover from that.
No, and I don't think you should. But on the football field, I don't think that Maryland is a good fit, their offense. Because, you know, they have Ty Johnson. They have all those scat backs who have been good at getting the edge. And Michigan has Devin Bush. And hopefully they have Josh Ross, and they have Winovich, and they have Gary, hopefully. Guys who can really get.
I would sit Rashawn. Would you say I would sit Rashawn for this game?
I mean, it depends on what Rashawn's goals are, too, right?
It depends on
his injury. Well, I mean,
he might.
You know, is he leaving for the NFL after this year?
Yes.
You want to get his numbers up?
No.
Obviously, the first thing it depends on is how his shoulder's doing.
If you could win this game without Rashawn Gary, and I think they can.
Yeah.
Sure. I think we saw them be very effective. I'm not saying that you won't miss Rashawn. Of course you miss Rashawn Gary. Right. But I think you can still have the type of performance from the guys out there without Rashawn that can win this game.
I think you might play him and then have a quick hook if you get up 14 points.
I have sort of two abstract questions. One is whether a week off before a game means anything. I know it means you get healthier, but
that's all I'm looking at.
Yeah, but I mean, Northwestern had the extra week of preparing, and I think they did well with it. Question is whether Maryland also having an extra week to prepare, you know, what they can do with that.
You know,
the second question I've got is the weather. It's supposed to be rainy. If it rains, that sort of equalizes teams. But I think bad weather tends to push teams to the middle. I mean, that if I was playing Tiger Woods in golf, for example, I'd want the worst sleet storm imaginable. It would be the only thing that would, you know.
Which he does on a regular basis because he's a lawyer.
That's right. In my Mercedes, right.
Let's go to the phones. Let's get a phone call in real quick. Eric in South Carolina. Eric, what's up?
Hey, how's it going, fellas?
Well, great.
Hey, two quick questions. Well, before the two quick questions, Devin Gill missed a obvious sack in the Notre Dame game and that resulted in the touchdown. So he's been doing this ever since he's been playing this season. But do you guys think that teams saw something in the Vert Hill that made them think that they could pass on it? Because I think it started with Haskins burnt them in Ohio State game last season, and teams been attacking him all season this season. And do you guys think that Mike Anyuwinu is a step slow on his pulls? Because it seemed like his guys meeting him in the backfield when he's pulling. So that's my spiel, guys. Have a good one. Go Blue. Great show today.
I guess I haven't seen. I don't feel like they're attacking LaVert Hill.
Yeah, I think they're staying away from David Long.
They haven't really been testing the cornerbacks very much at all.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think you throw fades against Michigan because they play man to man. I mean, that's one of the man beaters, and he just happens to be out there. Whoever's out there, they throw fades at him. But if teams are making a concerted effort to attack a position, I don't think it's the corners.
As far as Onwenu pulling, there were a couple incidents in the Northwestern game where he got hit in the backfield. I don't think either of those were necessarily on him. One was the fourth and short where you just have Patty Fisher ripping across the line. Mm-hmm. Any offensive lineman is going to get met in the backfield when Michigan is telegraphing that and running a slow developing play like a power play on short yardage. Mm-hmm. And then the other one was Joe Gaziano, who was let go, I think, by Eubanks on the first level. And usually you don't see that. It's possible that that was as planned, but if it was, it was not a good plan.
And he's good, as Brian predicted. He's a good player.
Well, you need to listen to me to know that Joe Gaziano can play.
So, winner and score this weekend, Michigan, Maryland.
29-6.
I like Michigan by about 20, assuming 20-23, depending on the weather. If the weather's decent.
Yeah, that's good.
If the weather's decent, they'll win by 23, 24, 20.
Ed Fang?
32.2 for Michigan, 13.1 for Maryland. Straight from my computer.
That's bigger than the spread by a significant margin, isn't it?
Yeah, a couple points.
A couple points.
The spread is what, 14 and a half?
No, it's up to like, I thought it was up to 16.
16,
16,
okay.
17.
Big number.
Yeah, my numbers have them by, on a neutral field, by right around 20. So add 3 for the field, 23.
All right, it's been real, fellas, as always. Great to have you here on another MGO Blog Roundtable. We got to get out of here. Hopefully, Brian will take me on a ride. You want to check it out? I don't ride in many, high esteem cars like
nobody buys it.
We're going to post pictures on Twitter after.
Absolutely, we will.
Better than us!
No!